Great morning, everyone, and welcome to yet another episode of Thank God for Monday. I'm Brother Greg Cellini of the Franciscan Brothers of Brooklyn and the Office of Mission Ministry Interfaith Dialogue at St. Francis College. My great pleasure to be back again with you today. The purpose of our show, Thank God for Monday, is to inspire you, our audience, to take personal responsibility for your professional satisfaction. We want to provide you hope, healing, and peace in these unprecedented, turbulent, uncertain times, and motivate you to search deep inside yourself in the quest for fulfillment. Listeners, it's really up to you as how to utilize the information we provide today, take full accountability for the decisions you make and the resulting outcome. The goals of our show, Thank God for Monday, is to introduce role models of people who take very bold steps in their work life. This is a very special time in our workplace and our world, a time when better conversations have never been more vital. And as such, we are honored today to have with us a very, very special guest. His name is Chuck Wisner. Chuck is the president of Wisner Consulting. His very prestigious client list includes Google, Apple, Tesla, Harvard Business School, and Ford. He is also the author of the very timely book, The Art of Conscious Conversations, Transforming How We Talk, Listen, and Interact. Great morning and welcome to Thank God for Monday, Chuck.
Good morning to you, and thanks for having me.
The honor is all ours. Kindly share from what city and state you are speaking from this morning, please.
We are about 30 miles north of Boston in a little beach town called Manchester by the Sea. So that's where we are.
Oh, you've just made this host and the listeners very, very jealous. Sounds like a beautiful part of God's country, that's for sure.
It
Sorry
is, yeah.
to say, Chuck, we've only got 30 minutes. We could spend hours talking about you, your incredible life, this fabulous book you've written. If it's okay with you, we're going to just jump right into the deep end of the pool.
Jay, jump right in.
Chuck, what inspired you to write this great book, The Art of Conscious Conversation?
Well, there's two parts to that answer. First is when I changed careers when I was about 40 because I was an architect in Boston.
Wow.
And in that world and in the partnership of the firm that I was at, I just noticed all kinds of conflict and people, smart people getting stupid together. And ultimately my firm needed to bring in some help with a problem we had with a principal of the firm. He was an alcoholic, and that was a tough thing to go through. But this person that came in, her name was Linda Reed, read the situation, worked with us individually, helped us through it. And I said, "How did she do that? That was like magic. You know, she knew something and I didn't know about people and about conversations and all that." And so she really inspired me, and I started studying to find out what she did, which why she did, how she did what she did. And then so that's step one. And then I ended up like retooling myself, and that took 4 years. And then I changed careers. And then as I was working with clients over the next 5 years, 10 years, all the things we were teaching around language and words and the power of conversations, people kept saying, where can I read this? Where can I learn about this?" And
Oh, wow.
what I realized was there's really good information out there, and there's nothing earth-shatteringly new in the book, but I tried to compile things that were hard to get at.
Oh,
So
that's terrific.
that gave me a reason to sort of say, "How do I put all this together so it's accessible and practical and really helpful?"
We did a great job because, as our listeners know, I'm a terrible reader, but even I could pick this up and read it and gain so much understanding from it. So again, many, many thanks. We're so lucky to have someone of your ilk on, thank God, for Monday today. Now, you talk about, beginning of the book, awareness and ego. Awareness and ego. What role do they play, please, in having more conscious conversation?
Okay, so let's start with the ego. And I don't want to give it a bad name. Most of us wouldn't exist very much if we didn't have some form of ego. We wouldn't know who we were. But there's a problem with that ego when it is not supervised. Let's say it that way. Because a big part of the book, I talk about how relevant and critically important stories are to our lives and to our identities as individuals. And so we adopt a lot of stories from our families, our cultures, our education, and our experiences. And that's how we make sense of the world, and that's how we navigate the world. However, when we have a story that's not particularly helpful or serving us or actually harmful to us, we tend to get hooked on our stories. We tend to get identified with them, like, here's my story, here's my ego, and I'm wrapped up in that, right? And so we're hooked, and then we have our emotional reactions and we have our upsets or our anger or whatever it is. So the idea is, with awareness, we can actually witness that process. We have an ability to be aware of ourselves as human beings, a self-awareness. And so that awareness allows us to say, look at a pattern, and I love calling some of our troubled times patterns, our reactions patterns. We can look at a pattern and go, wow, is that serving me? And where did it come from? And can I change that? And so this thing of ego and awareness sort of go hand in hand as yes, we want an ego, but we have to have it in check. And our awareness is our ability to actually have a fresh look. Does that make sense?
Very, very much so. That's very, very helpful. Thank you so very, very much. Now, the book, of course, is all about conscious conversation. Why are these conscious conversations so important to our well-being and improving relationships, something we all want to do?
Right. So the book is organized around four types of conversations. And the reason I believe, and part of the reason I wrote the book, is that we grow up in conversation from the day we're born. You know, we hear our parents oogling over us, and we hear everything, and we grow up and we learn to be in conversation. However, we're never taught sort of some of the fundamentals of how conversations work or why they don't work. And so the idea of, if we can learn something new about conversations, like I like to say the DNA of conversations, it takes a bit of our innocence away. Instead of being, I think in the book I say, we're like fish in water, we're humans in conversation.
Oh, wow.
And so instead of like just being in conversation, we can be much more aware of how they work. And therefore, if we're more aware, we can say, oh, well, I don't need to do it that way. I can do it this way. And we can make a shift. So it's really bringing some ideas and some thinking and distinctions around conversations that we don't have that help us then see them and experience them and be in them in a different way.
This is so fascinating and resonating with everything you said. And one thing you mentioned was that we're never taught to have conscious conversation. And it's very interesting, because when we think of school and reading and writing and math and all these great things, it would make sense that we would learn this because these conversations are so critical, but yet that formal education, this area is not there. I find that fascinating, certainly.
Yeah.
Now, in the book, you also talk about how our pattern thinking and reaction set us up for what you call stressful conversation. Chuck, help us out, please. How do we begin to minimize our autopilot reaction in conversations, please?
Yeah. Well, I think, thank you for bringing that word patterns up. I mentioned it earlier, but our tendency with our ego and our familiarity with our habits, our sort of being in conversation sort of blindly, right? When something goes awry, we have a tendency to go negative and go toward judgment. Like, why did she say that? Why would he ever do that to me? Or why on the earth didn't I push back? Or why didn't I do this? There's a lot of negative judgment that goes on in our inner conversation, maybe not our outer conversation, right? And I like to call those our conversational patterns, and I think of them like fingerprints. Like, we all have patterns of how we engage in conversation, that we didn't necessarily consciously adopt. We learned it from our parents, from our teachers, from our environment and culture. So we didn't consciously adopt them, but there are patterns in conversation. One person might get angry at something, another person, it might not bother them at all because they have different conversational fingerprints, right?
Oh, wow.
And so the reason I like to introduce the word patterns, so our fingerprints are patterns, is that we can then take a more objective look at them. You know, here again, we can become aware of what our pattern is. And without judging it, we can go, oh, wow, I adopted that one from my dad. You know, when this happens, he would get really mad and you know, all hell would break loose. And oh, I'm doing the same thing. I'm playing out my dad's pattern. So we can begin to look at these things with a more compassionate, more neutral eye and say, oh, you know what? I have some power to change that pattern.
Let's peel the onion, if you don't mind, please, Chuck, and talk a little more about this judgment, how we come to kind of judge almost these conversations and these patterns, please.
Well, I'm certainly not a psychiatrist, psychologist, but I've done that's a hobby of mine, so I study a lot. So without getting into details, I think at a high level, if you think about it, when we're growing up, our parents have a responsibility to teach us things, right?
Sure.
And we always make mistakes.
Absolutely.
But our parents also criticize us. Don't do that. Don't do this. That was a stupid thing to do. Why? What on earth were you thinking? You know, that kind of. And so there's that almost a built-in cultural pattern of having judgments come at us. And as young children, we just sort of like, we don't have any real power because they're the authority figures, right?
Sure.
And so I think in some ways, as we mature, we become our own parents. We become our own judge, you know. And for most people, if you look at a disturbing or a frustrating conversation, if you just take a minute to look underneath your emotion, your anger, your frustration, and you say, well, what am I thinking? Or what am I feeling? And usually there is where you're going to find an internal judgment of yourself or an internal judgment of somebody else that you can then work with.
Oh, that's brilliant. Absolutely no question about that. Thank you for that clarification. Now, you write in the book about something you call, and I'd never heard of this concept before, our private conversation. Thinking one thing while we say something else. Why do we do this? What does that do to us? And how do we stop this, please, Chuck?
Okay. Now this sort of it's a good follow-up question on our last question. I've done an exercise around this with hundreds of people, and it's surprising how little awareness we have of the monkey mind running in the background of our consciousness. Right. And I think in different traditions, it's all called different things. There's monkey mind, there's the committee, there, you know. But I do think it's just a normal human thing to have That's our thinking process rolling. That's our brain trying to make sense of things, right? But even how we make sense of things is based on our experiences, based on our patterns, right? So we might be in a conversation and someone says, well, we should do this. And I'm thinking, and I say, no, not a bad idea. But what I'm really thinking is that's a really stupid idea.
Oh, wow.
Right? Right? And so the exercises become more familiar with the gap between what we're saying and what we're thinking privately and feeling privately.
Oh, wow.
And when we expose that gap, and I have a theory that the bigger the gap between our private thinking and feeling and what we say out loud, the more stress we live in.
Oh my goodness. Okay. Okay.
And so the idea is to start recognizing what those private thoughts and feelings are without judgment, because they're patterns too, right?
Sure.
We can then look at them and go, well, what really am I concerned about? Why am I reacting this way? We can do a little self-reflection and probably turn that into gold. I say that's that internal stuff can be really judgmental and negative and toxic, but we can take that and we can turn it into something useful for a conversation.
Oh, that's terrific. Now, sadly, Chuck, maybe they're in the Boston area as well as here in beautiful Brooklyn, the state of the world in many cases is fueling our personal worry.
Yeah.
Why is it so hard to detach from what we see in the news? And any thoughts as to how we can reset?
Yeah. Again, I think there's multiple layers to answer that. But at the highest level, sometimes for me, if I'm getting sucked into a really negative vortex and worry, I really try to go big. I really try to get to a much bigger perspective. And when you can expand your perspective, instead of getting locked in on this little pinhole of what's happening, right? You expand your perspective. You have a much wider perspective of how humans have evolved and how history has changed and how humans go through these cycles. And, you know, so we're in cycles, and we have cycles where we're flourishing and we have cycles where we're doing devastation to one another.
Sure.
So just that bit of perspective helps from getting caught in a web that you can't get out of. Right. So that's one. And then at a more micro level, I think when you start what you're listening to or what you're hearing, you know, in the book, I make a really huge distinction. Our stories are made of three things: our emotions, facts, and opinions.
Oh.
And what happens is facts and opinions get completely, our ears don't make a distinction.
Oh, wow.
Right. And so it's really good if you're really wanting to be involved, start by figuring out what information do you have that's true, right? Start with, at least it's a firm ground to stand on.
Okay.
This is true, this isn't true. Now, that's what's true and what's not true is an interesting philosophical question, but because we share a common bodies and common ways that we think, we know what facts are. A table is a table and black is black. And,
sure.
You know, so if we can just begin to settle down by saying this is a fact or this is not a fact or this is true or this is not true, we at least keeps us from going down a path that can be very devastating.
Yeah. Oh,
does that make sense?
Absolutely. Very, very helpful advice. Now, this is a question selfishly I need to ask, as well as I'm sure our listeners will very much appreciate. Collaborative conversation, politics, the office, at home, with people with differing points of view, they're so hard to have, especially these days. How can we approach them more effectively, Chuck, please, and have them be more productive?
Yeah. Okay. So there are, you know, we're so divided in many ways. But I, you know, I go back to, again, this is your follow up questions are good because they're continuing what my previous answer. I tried to first separate the person from their position.
Wow.
Their person from their perspective. Because if we really think big, we think that person, whatever their DNA, whatever their experience, whatever their education, they have patterns of how they think and how they're reacting to the world. And I can be really compassionate about that.
Nice.
I don't have to be compassionate about their position.
Oh.
Because their position is a story that they're telling. And the story, again, has a foundation of facts or not. Right?
Wow, yes.
And so if I can engage them at that level, while not, judging and having a private conversation, this is a terrible human being. If I can still hold them as a worthy human being and be tolerant, I can then talk about positions, and I can start to take them apart. Like, okay, are there any facts that we can agree on?
Oh, okay.
And then in the book, I break down all of our opinions into four things. There's four things that always drive people's positions. They are our desires. And our desires are good things because they help us reach goals and do things in life. But they also get us in deep trouble, because when we want something that doesn't align with reality, we better check that out.
Oh, wow. Okay.
We always have concerns about the future. If I'm up worrying at 2 o'clock in the morning, it's because I'm worried about tomorrow.
Oh, geez.
Check it out. What's that about? And see if it's true or not true. There are always power issues in every conversation. One person you might say something and you give their voice a lot of authority. Another friend might say the same thing, or not. I mean, a friend might say something, you give them lots of authority. Someone else might say the same thing and you go, huh, you just blow it off because you don't give their voice authority.
Wow.
So whether it's parenting or in your line of work or in business or whatever it is, there are authority issues. We give people's voices a power and authority.
Sure.
Hierarchy. And then the last one is standards. And that's huge, because what we don't realize is for every opinion we have, it's based on a standard that we adopted from our family, our culture, our experience. This is what's good. This is what's bad. This is what how a leader should be. This is how someone should behave. We have standards for every opinion we have and judgment we have. There are standards underneath that are generally not spoken about.
Oh, that's so helpful. Sadly, Chuck, time is getting a bit short. We've only got about 8 minutes. We could talk all day, certainly, but I've got a couple of important questions for you.
Good.
I don't know about our listeners, but for me, sometimes it seems very easy to let something seemingly small, a text from a friend, an email from a colleague, ruin the day.
Mm-hmm.
Is there a way to manage these types of things as they happen, please?
Yeah, so when that happens, the first thing to do is investigate your own reaction. So we have an emotional reaction, like we might get angry. Why would they ever say that? Or why would they ever do that? We might have a frustration. So investigate that, because our emotions are a physical manifestation of our thinking. So you can get lost in the anger, but if you take a minute and just go, wait a minute, why am I reacting this way? Oh, I'm afraid I'm going to lose my job because my boss just sent me a nasty text. I don't think a friend should treat another friend that way. That's my standard. Obviously, I could talk to them about that, or a desire. I mean, so those four questions: desires, concerns, authority, and standards, are the same thing we can ask ourselves. Why am I having this reaction? Because we can turn that then into a positive, productive, conscious conversation. Because I can often say to someone, yeah, I know we don't agree, but you know what's interesting here? I'm measuring it in a different way than you are. I'm looking at it. My standard is a leader shouldn't talk that way or behave that way. And they're saying, but that's how you get ahead. That's how you do, And then we can have a conversation about a standard instead of just fighting about who's right and who's wrong.
Oh, that's absolutely brilliant. No question about that. Now, You write in the book that our interpretation of what someone says is rarely 100%. What we say isn't what someone else hears. What someone else says isn't what we hear. Please, please, Chuck, explain more about this.
Yeah, that is mostly because we have this brilliant, fast-acting, hundreds of billions of you know, neurons firing in our brain every second, right? And so information comes in through all of our senses, and then based on our DNA and our experience, all our brain is very busy connecting dots, right? And going, oh, this is what's happening, right? And so we have this huge filtering mechanism that says, this is what's happening, this is what I'm hearing. So one part of this answer is to be aware that we're always filtering and just assume that what you hear, you should check with the other person to make sure you got it right. Like, let me understand, did you really mean this? Did you really mean to do that? And just check that box, because we, this interpretation happens in a millisecond, and then we are there, we are with the position, there we are with the fight, right?
Exactly.
Right. And so that, just understanding that helps us slow down a little bit, and catch ourselves before we sort of like go off on a tilt or something.
Yeah.
I'm not sure if that answered your question.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. That's so important to understand that and remember that. So, and as you say, validate what someone has said or what I have said to the other individual. Yeah, I don't know if this has happened to you, but sometimes the words are about 3 feet out of my mouth and I regret saying them. Is there a playbook to make these thoughtful amends in these situations, Chuck? Help us out. Help me out, please.
Sure. The last part of the book is about commitment conversations, which is really how we make promises. And life thrives on our little promises. You know, I promise to take out the garbage. I promise to pay this person and they can do X, Y, and Z. And business promises. Promises are how we take action, how we coordinate action with other people, right?
Yeah.
And so in a way, we have these social promises of how to treat one another, and how we have standards around how to treat one another, how to respond to things. So it's interesting to understand that sort of game, dance of how we make promises, because inevitably you're going to say something on autopilot that you regret, right? But to really be able to go, wow, you know, I didn't think that through, and I hurt the other person. I did harm, right? Wow. And so, you know, so actually a very productive apology isn't to just say, I'm sorry, but it's to say, here's what I said. Here's what I think the consequences are. I think I hurt your feelings. I think that might damage our relationship. Here's what I'm going to do, and here's what I will try to do in the future so I don't make that mistake again. And so we can actually take a fresh look at those kind of mishaps or mistakes. But we can also, it also takes a little bit of vulnerability and humility. You know, because when we make a mistake often, we just go, oh, I blew that one, you know. But there's damage, there's consequences. So a little bit of humility allows us to look at our own stuff, and then the vulnerability to open up and say, wow, I shouldn't have done that.
Wow. Two really important words. Remember, as we continue through 2023 and beyond, humility and vulnerability, that's for sure. Chuck, I've saved the most important question for last. From where can our loyal listeners purchase The Art of Conscious Conversation, Transforming How We Talk, Listen, and Interact? How can we best follow you, please?
Okay, so it is available online at Amazon, Barnes & Noble, my publisher, Barrett Kohler. And then you can also ask your favorite bookstore to order it if they don't have it, right? And then if you enjoy the book, give me a review on Amazon. That's really helpful for me. And it's like pulling teeth, getting people to do reviews. And then my website is chuckwisner.com. And I am on Instagram and Facebook as Chuck_Wisner. And I'm on LinkedIn as well. So they can follow me any of those places.
Listeners, absolutely no excuse. Let me give you the spelling of Chuck's name, Chuck. Wisner is Wisner. Do yourself a favor, buy a copy of this book, buy at least one. Chuck has been a great Franciscan this morning. He hasn't held on all the good he has. He has shared it. Now it's your turn. Buy more than one. Give this to a friend. Give this to a significant other. Give this to somebody else. We need to make our world and our workplace better venues for conscious conversation. This book will go a long way. I've learned so much this last 30 minutes. I'm sure you have as well. And this book will give you great, great further insight as to how to have these wonderful conversations. Chuck Wisner, we can't thank you enough for gracing the airways. And thank God for Monday this morning. Yes, we've been enlightened. We've been inspired as well. The importance of conscious conversations moving forward into 2023 and beyond to really enhance our relationships, our workplace, and our world. Continued success, joy, and contribution in all this fabulous work that you're doing.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate the time today.
It was all our pleasure. Listeners, guess what? Once again, we're out of time. Greg saying our hope and prayer is that when you wake up on Monday morning, just like Chuck does, you'll say, thank God for Monday. Until next week's episode of Thank God for Monday, have a great week, everybody. Bye-bye.